evening, Juice Takers. Hi, how you doing? Mike Malone here. Hey, whoa. Just out watering the calves. I'm sorry. Almost missed the music cue here. Okay, let me this cow stuff on off my shoes here. More about cows later tonight during church night. It is church night, you know, right? This is Wednesday. For those of you who don't know, church night is in commemoration of my ute when I used to hang out with my grandparents in the summer. And every Wednesday night was prayer meeting night. And we would go to the local, or well, not the local, but their Baptist church. Calvary Baptist Church. And there would be a prayer meeting. And I, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old little Mikey, would watch the adults get down on their knees and pray up in the upper room of the church. It was quite an experience. You may have had that experience, by the way. And thanks to our regular listeners who hear me say this every Wednesday and go, oh, Jesus, get on with it. So this is church night. And we have some items that fits neatly into that category. This hour, by the way, is being sponsored by Nick Giotto, who, thanks, Nick. His message, thank you for telling it like it is. Thank you for church night. And thank you for using kick-ass bumper music in your show. I've been listening since 2004 and have you to thank for introducing me to Leonard Cohen and solo stuff by Roger Waters. It's hard to put a value on that, but this is a good start. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate the support. I really do. Thank you very much. You know, I've said before that Limbaugh is a child molester. I have no doubt that he has sex with underage people. I think that's the reason he goes to Dominican Republic. And when he comes back, as famously happened to him a couple of years ago, and he has Viagra in his little tote bag that he has no prescription for. You know, when you're as famous as Rush Limbaugh, you have to cover your tracks. But I'm convinced he's a child molester of the highest order. He's like a lot of Catholic priests. He's like a lot of older white men who, you know, are married for reasons of cover. And then they used to make a deal with their wives. Listen, I have this predilection for youngsters. So I hope, you know, since I am paying you millions to be my bride, I hope you will just shut up and look the other way. Well, don't do it in front of me. Okay. Now, I get a lot of flack from people who say, where's your proof? Okay. You want some proof? We will. Now, have I caught Rush with his drawers down around his knees and a half-naked 10-year-old with him? No, not quite. But this is a little clip that Tim in L.A. sent to me. I think it's from Think Progress. Or Crooks and Liars, one of them. Here is a little clip from one of his programs, I think 4 or 5 days ago, and I want you to listen very closely.
Let's go to Katy, Island Park, Idaho. Glad you called. Great to have you on the program. Hello.
Hi, Rush. Yeah, my name is Katy, and I'm 14, and I'm not sure if I qualify to be a Rush baby or a Rush babe. What do you think?
You're 14?
I'm 14.
You're both. You are Rush baby and a Rush babe both. We'll count you both.
All righty.
Have you signed up on our Facebook page?
Yes, I just did this morning.
Well, then you're a Rush babe. That's it.
All righty.
14. Well, thanks very much, Katy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rush.
See, folks, this program has no boundaries. We have people from all three sexes. We have people from all religions. We have people from all genders, all demographics, all ages. A 14-year-old Rush babe.
How about that? Now, you know, that program on NBC, what is it, Caught on Tape, or that one with, what's his name? Where they deliberately entice older white men. You ever notice it's always white men? Older white men via the internet to have sex with 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old children. And when these guys show up, of course, they're never there for sex. They're there to steer the child away from a life of sexual disaster. But listen to Limbaugh. Play the first part of that again, if you would, Kathy. Listen to Limbaugh. This little girl is saying, am I a Rush babe or a Rush baby? I guess
let's go to Katie, Island Park, Idaho. Glad you called. Great to have you on the program. Hello.
Hi, Rush. Yeah, my name is Katie, and I'm 14, and I'm not sure if I qualify to be a Rush baby or a Rush babe. What do you think?
You're 14?
I'm 14.
You're both. You are Rush baby and a Rush babe both. We'll
okay, that's
you both.
That's enough. To catch a predator, that's it. Thanks, James. Chris Hansen, to catch a predator. Now, this obese son of a bitch goes on 700 radio stations a few days ago and says this. Oh, you're 14? Oh, really? You know, if they're old enough to bleed, they're old enough to slaughter. Ha, 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 right? Right? Hey, Mr. Quigley, or whatever that jerk's name that runs his board. 14 years old. Now, this is the same Limbaugh who calls 32-year-old college student a slut and a whore and a prostitute. Was that Sandra Fluke?
And if she wants to have sex, he wants to
see it. And if this woman wanted to have sex, he wants to see it on the internet. He wants to watch a sex tape. And he tells a 14-year-old she's a Rush babe. How soon before you think Rush Limbaugh will discreetly, or have someone else, discreetly email this child and ask for some nude photos? Good God.
Oh, but you right-wingers love him, don't you? Oh, hell, he was just kidding. No, come on, boys. 14-year-old girl. Good God. What's the matter? He wasn't serious. What, are you sick? It's your mind, Malloy, not Rush's.
Right. Child molesting, son of a bitch. And you can hear the child kind of giggle. What am I, a baby or a babe? Oh, you're a babe. How old are you? 14. Oh,
well then. Yeah.
How young do they have to be, Limbaugh? How young? Filth. And of course, he made sure that.
Did you sign up on the Facebook page? Oh, you did? Oh, good. Wait till you see what I'm going to send you. Oh, just kidding, huh, Mr. Quigley? Yeah.
Man. The fallout from the Facebook debacle continues. Don't you just love to see something like that? I mean, nobody's lost any money so far, but all the rubes who thought they were going to make money, and the little nerd who came up with Facebook, what is Facebook? Well, it's a place where we do keystrokes. Oh, yeah, what do you make? Keystrokes? We get all this information. We know how many times you go to the bathroom, and then we sell it. Really? So, there's a hot new social network. Have you heard about this? A new social network is about to alter the playing field of the social media world. And I don't know. This one probably has some promise. But they all seem to have a promise. So we're going to take a break here. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what this new social networking company is called. You might want to get in on this one. We'll be right back.
Lavoy Show. Talk radio matters here.
21 past the hour. It is church night on the Lavoy program. But we have other things to cover, too. It's not just about Rush Limbaugh trying to make a date with a 14-year-old. What a pig. What a filthy pig. You know, the day will come. There is no question. The day will come when he's going to be caught with a live boy or a dead girl. And that's the end of this filthy lump of human waste. A new social network is about to alter the playing field of the social media world. And it's called Phonebook. Phonebook. According to its creators, who invented this network in their dorm room at Berkeley, Phonebook is the game changer that will leave Facebook, Twitter, and even the much-anticipated Google Buzz in a cloud of dust. Have you heard about this? Huh? Phonebook? One of Phonebook's creators, Danny Fruber, says, quote, with Phonebook, you have a book that has a list of all your friends in the city, plus everyone else who lives there. When you want to chat with a friend, you look them up in Phonebook and find their unique Phonebook number. Then you enter that number into your phone, and it connects you directly to them. End quote. Now, another breakout utility of Phonebook allows the user to arrange face-to-face meetings with his or her friends at restaurants, bars, and other places, as Mr. Fruber likes to call them. He says, you'll be sitting right across from your friend and seeing them in 3D. It's like Skype, only without the headset. And Phonebook will enable friends to play many games as well, such as charades, cards, and a game Fruber believes will be a breakout. It's called Farm. Fruber says, in Farm, you have an actual farm where you raise real crops and livestock. It's hard work, but it's more fun than Mafia, where you actually get killed. Well, so there you go. It's coming. Phonebook, it's called. And to get a Phonebook app, it doesn't even cost 99 cents. It's delivered right to your house. Oh, Andy Borowitz sent that to me. Did you hear about this? You know, the right wing jumps on me sometimes for insisting that Rush Limbaugh is a child molester, which he is. But what about this? I've said many times that Dick Cheney is a goddamn vampire, and he is. How about this one? A British auction house has caused an uproar over its plans to sell a vial containing former President Ronald Reagan's blood. Peter Fraser Collectibles. Now, this is for real. This was in the National Memo, and it was also in the Guardian of the UK and CBS News. Peter Fraser Collectibles claims that the vial of dried blood residue, which is now forbidding, was taken by a woman who worked at Bioscience Laboratories. That's where Reagan's blood work was done when he was recuperating from an assassination attempt in 1981. According to CBS News, bidding for the vial passed $11,000 as of yesterday afternoon. The auction lasts until Thursday, but some want to see it stopped immediately. The executive director of the Reagan Foundation, John Hubush, said in a statement, quote, if indeed this story is true, it's a craven act, and we will use every legal means to stop its sale or purchase. Any individual, including a president of the United States, should feel confident that once they enter into the care of a medical system, their privacy and rights are held inviolable, end quote. Really? Any individual? Once they enter into the care of a medical system, their privacy? Except those goddamn women, right? Reagan's blood cells are one thing, but a woman's mighty vagina. You get my point. The auction house claims that it contacted the Reagan National Library about selling the blood sample to them, but was told that it would not be accepted. It could only be accepted as a donation. The vial's owner, a self-described Reaganomics fan, told CBS News that, quote, President Reagan himself would rather see me sell it rather than donating it, end quote. That led him to put it up for auction. None of the bidders for Reagan's blood has been publicly identified, but don't count out Sean Hannity, who's the noted collector of insane conservative memorabilia, or Mitt Romney, who may hope to use the blood to win over right-wing Republicans once and for all. I kind of believe it's coming from Dick Cheney. Because Reagan's blood, Reagan was magic. Reagan's blood is beyond magic. Reagan's blood is like it's like the Shroud of Turin. Reagan's blood would be, I don't know. I think Cheney thinks that he'll be able, if he drinks this, you know, mixes a little, I don't know, what do you mix it with? A little olive oil and drink it, that he, Cheney, will then be able to reach inside his own chest and pull out this goddamn ridiculous heart that belongs to somebody else, throw it in the gutter, and he'll live forever!
Come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour being sponsored by Nick in California. His message, Mike, thank you for telling it like it is. Thank you for church night. And thank you for using kick-ass bumper music in your show. I've been listening since 2004. Woo! And have you to thank for introducing me to Leonard Cohen and Roger Waters' solo stuff. It's hard to put a value on that, but this is a good start. Thank you, Nick. Thank you very much for the sponsorship. All right, now there's a website, politicususa.com, politicususa.com. And one of the writers there, Tim in L.A., who is also one of the frequent visitors in our Malloy chat room, he has a piece there. In order for you to understand the piece, we're going to play the Limbaugh call with a 14-year-old child from a couple of days ago.
Let's go to Katie, Island Park, Idaho. Glad you called. Great to have you on the program. Hello.
Hi, Rush. Yeah, my name is Katie, and I'm 14, and I'm not sure if I qualify to be a Rush baby or a Rush babe. What do you think?
You're 14?
I'm 14.
You're both. You are a Rush baby and a Rush babe both. We'll count you both.
Alrighty.
Have you signed up at our Facebook page?
Yes, I just did this morning.
Well, then you're a Rush babe. That's it.
Alrighty.
14. Well, thanks very much, Katie. I appreciate it.
All right. That's all you need to hear. Tim, who writes to Politicus USA, wrote this. Never in my life have I heard a radio show who speak like this to a 14-year-old. Not even Howard Stern would stoop this low. When Stern was on terrestrial radio, he spoke to children, 17 years old and younger, like the father he was and is. He never used perverted language talking to children. He never called a girl a babe, nor did he go out to take calls unless there was a specific topic. But beyond that, he would never call a 14-year-old girl a babe. And if he did, the right-wing nut religious right, as well as the progressive left, would scream in protest at his sexist terminology. Yet the Christian right would want to censor him for speaking indecently of women, while Limbaugh's comments don't even raise Cain. Stern had scruples, and underage boys and girls were treated with kid gloves. Stern once said he could not date a woman 18 years old because his second child was 18, and it'd be like dating his daughter. It's just wrong. But still, Limbaugh has the right to be a perverted child molester and to take his Viagra excursions to the Dominican Republic. But hey, Limbaugh isn't without scruples. He said this one time, quote, drug use, some might say, is destroying the country. And we have laws against selling drugs, pushing drugs, using drugs, importing drugs. And so if people are violating law by doing drugs, they ought to be accused and they ought to be convicted and they ought to be sent up. That was Limbaugh on his short live television show, October 5, 1995. How much longer is this filthy son of a bitch going to be allowed on American radio? How much longer? What a nice, fine, upstanding example of Christian manhood, of successful capitalism. Isn't he grand, ladies and gents? What a role model. Tina DePew, writing at the LAProgressive.com. Why Republicans need a war on religion? Tina's very perceptive. She points out the Republicans didn't set out to have a war on women. No. They wanted a war on religion. Their intention was to march two Republican-created boogeymen into a battle that would make the war on Christmas cringe. Obamacare? And Obama is a Muslim. Obamacare? And Obama is a Muslim. The Affordable Care Act stipulates birth control be included in insurance coverage instead of forcing women to pay out of pocket for such medications. This was the shot across the bow for the GOP to start their war. Republican sage Congressman Daryl Issa, whatever the hell his name is, called a bunch of men of faith, yeah, all men, to testify to Congress how the provision in the health care law regarding birth control would adversely affect them. Oh, it'll make my penis drop off. The same way as marriage between people who are of the same gender will ruin everything for us normal people. God damn it. I love my penis. I don't want it to drop off. Then the right-wing ecosphere spent the next week bouncing the soundbite. This ain't about contraception. This is about religious freedom. America's right wing, they're afraid of Muslims, they're suspicious of Mormons, they're terrified of atheists and martyrs of religious freedom. Oh, yes. Now, Republicans botched their war on religion when the pig man uttered the word slut. Oh, and by proposing laws against women getting equal pay and a right to privacy or recourse if a doctor lies to them. The chairman of the RNC, Rincey Priebus, said the war on women is imaginary. At the same moment, Republican legislators around the country were introducing bills eroding women's rights. So the war over what kind of war this was, religion or women, was lost by Republicans. Their best efforts to get a fruitful campaign about religious liberty backfired into a debate about gender equality. To quote Rick Perry, oops! How have they fumbled manufacturing a war on religion? Perhaps it's just hard to convince Americans we are a Christian nation founded in religion with the tradition of religion in every facet of our lives, from our money to our pledge of allegiance, and that faith is somehow being threatened. It's like saying you're the size of Goliath, but everyone should view you as David. Republicans really need a war on religion, badly. A common foe would not only glaze over the fact their nominee is from a new sect distrusted by other sects. It would unite, they hope, all people of faith into their special brand of ultra-conservative gospel, a gospel the megachurch pastor, tax-free status enjoyer, summed up nicely, I don't believe in wealth distribution, he said on the holiest of Easter Sundays on ABC's This Week. Yes, when Jesus wasn't hunting quail with his Glock subcompact semi-auto, he was all over trickle-down economics and scapegoating the poor for political gain, right? A war on religion would give Republicans back their big tent. It would be a giant, diverse group of people who would put faith in the grand old party looking out for their eternal souls instead of looking out for just soulless corporations. All the hacking away at women's rights, the social safety net, consumer protection would be given a pass under religious freedom. Try this. This isn't about toxic drinking water. It's about religious freedom. This isn't about corporate welfare. It's about religious freedom. This isn't about millionaire tax breaks. It's about religious freedom. You see, it works for nearly everything. Now, this will all go perfectly if they find an enemy. when good enough or bad enough, as the case may be, to compel all Americans of faith to give up their petty differences and come together as Republicans. Since the GOP needs this war on religion to push through their ironically social Darwinist agenda, they're not going to give up trying to create one. So what does a preemptive victim searching for a persecutor look like? It looks a lot like the Republicans' war on religion. Tina DePue, writing at LAProgressive.com. Good stuff, Tina. War on Christmas. War on religion. War on the baby Jesus. War. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I have an email here from John in Sacramento, California, who had a personal experience with drones and drone procurement. He writes, Mike, in the late 1980s, early 90s, I sold software to the aerospace and defense industry, or as I referred to them with some of my colleagues, quote, the corrupt weapons of death welfare complex, end quote. One Friday night, I was flying back to LAX from D.C. and happened to sit next to a guy who seemed to be very frustrated. We exchanged pleasantries about what we did, and when he heard I sold to defense contractors, he told me about his week at the Pentagon. He said he was a Navy weapons contract administrator from Port Hueneme Naval Base in Ventura County, and his job was managing drone contracts for the Navy. It seems that Northrop had a multi-million-dollar contract to build target drones for the Navy. Northrop said they had met the terms of the agreement and wanted to be paid the balance of their cost-plus contract for the drones. Cost-plus is another corruption story for another time. Anyway, there was only one problem. The drones they had designed, built, and delivered to the Navy couldn't fly. Seriously, they couldn't take off or fly. This made them less useful as target drones for ship-to-air target practice. I guess shooting them while they sat on the ground or floated in the water didn't have the same practice value. Anyway, this Navy contracts guy told me that over his strenuous objections, Northrop had won payment of the contract balance. He said the reason they got paid for these non-functional drones was that in the contract itself did not specify anywhere that the drones had to take off or fly. Apparently, the Navy had assured that this was understood. Here's the punchline. Ready? He said that this was the last contract that Northrop would ever get from the Navy. Thank heavens, cooler heads in the Department of Defense prevailed. By the way, news item from the last 20 days. One, Northrop receives $500 million for long-endurance multi-intelligence vehicle blimp prototype. Two, Northrop Grumman awarded helicopter drone contract worth $262 million. Number three, Navy grounds drone copters, then spends $250 million to buy more. And so it goes! Love your show! First heard you on Air America when I was in L.A. Wish you're on the radio here in California's capital. Listen when I can online. Keep it lit. And don't let the flying F-monkeys get you down. John in Sacramento. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Nick in California. Nick's message, thank you for telling it like it is. Thank you for church night. Thank you for using kick-ass bumper music in your show. I've been listening since 2004 and have you to thank for introducing me to Leonard Cohen and Roger Waters solo stuff. It's hard to put a value on that, but this is a good start. Thanks, Nick. Thank you very, very, very much for the sponsorship. We really appreciate it. I think this is Bob Alexander's birthday, isn't it? Is it? I don't know. Okay. So I mispronounced the naval base in Ventura, California. Apparently it is pronounced Port Hueneme. Hueneme? 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 Whatever. Sorry! But anyway, the message in John in Sacramento's email came through loud and clear. Thank you, John. from Sand. Hi, Mike. As I listened to the podcast today when you spoke about the Bush crimes, I must say that Obama, by continuing the slaughter of civilians by his favorite weapon, the Reaper drone, Obama is also a war criminal. I guess I am now considered fringe by the good Democrats for my continued lack of support for someone who is doing the same and sometimes worse than Bush and Cheney. I drove through the bank teller lane to pay a bill yesterday. A woman who was helping me was looking at the poster that I had on my side window. It depicted facts concerning the cost of one missile and how that money could pay 40 teachers a $43,000 salary for 1 year. I told her I was anti-war, and she said, I have a son in the military, and my daughter just enlisted. And I said, oh, I'm very sorry. And she replied, we have to do it. And I said, what? And she said, we have to go over there and kill them all before they come here and kill us. I said, no, they won't come here to kill us. She slammed the drawer and walked away. This same brainwashing is going on under Obama. He wants the youngsters that he sends to death and to murder others to believe what his mom believes. Why else does he praise and honor the losses when he frequently visits military schools? He tells them that they are protecting us. Never does he tell them that they are there to protect the interests of the elites, to rob poor countries of the resources, and to continue U.S. empire. Peace. Sand. Yeah, you can't, you can't be anti-war and pro-Obama. You just cannot. How much of a shock was it when, how soon into his first term did Obama receive the Nobel Peace Prize? And when he went to Oslo to accept it, I don't remember the speech, it's out there, but he made a very strong case for war. I mean, God damn! You go to get a peace prize, and you explain that sometimes needless slaughter is needed. You have to explain that the killing of innocent people, although you never put it that way, God forbid, the killing of innocent people is just part of the game. Besides, they're not really people. They're just ciphers. They're blips. They live in caves. They wear funny hats. They talk weirdly. They're not real. And besides, we don't walk up to them and kill them. It's just sometimes when we unleash a Hellfire missile from a drone, we kill the wrong family, or the missile will slam into the house where everybody is hiding and shred them into strips of flesh, blood, eyeballs, hair, teeth, little tiny five-year-old ears. Jesus Christ. You cannot be anti-war and pro-Obama. From J.C., Wisconsin recall election, I think it's J. Christopher. Anyway, dear Mike, my coworker is planning to vote for Governor Walker in the upcoming recall election. He says he doesn't think there should be a recall election in the first place, and that his challenger, Walker's challenger, Tom Barrett, would undo everything Walker's done to bring down the deficit. As a single father, my coworker receives both his health insurance and substantial food aid from the state. He also gets the earned income tax credit. I guess he doesn't understand that Walker and his fellow Republicans would like nothing better than to strip these vital programs from him and thousands of others across the state of Wisconsin. I wonder, does such willful ignorance imply the desire for self-flagellation? Why do so many of us hate ourselves, denying ourselves every opportunity for equitable and rational governance? I don't know. I really don't. But we do continue to do that, don't we? Oh, and speaking of all that, did you hear what the Kansas governor, Sam Brownback, did today? it's... I'll tell you about it when we come back after the break here at the top of the hour. But it's... well, has to do with taxes. How's that? All right, we shall return after the break and carry on with church night here on the Molloy Show. We do have some church stuff coming up. Have we done any yet? I don't think we have. But church night is not just, well, I think the religion I'm going to have in the barrel for a while, a little bit later in the program, are the Hindus. I never go after the Hindus, I guess because, you know, just not that exposed to them. But there was an article on front page New York Times today which caught my attention. And from that article, I have derived a full frontal attack on Hindus. All you little right-wing scum-sucking bloggers, fire up your recording machines. So what did Republican Governor Sam Brownback of Kansas sign today? He signed one of the state's largest income tax cuts in history. During a ceremony at the Capitol in Kansas today. So starting next year, Kansas wage earners can expect to send less money to their state government. Yay! Brownback said the income tax relief will make Kansas more competitive and add jobs. Yay! Plus, it has nothing to do with the war on women. Brownback said, we're going to make this work. Yay! Hold on. Moderate Republicans? Wait a minute. Is that what that says? Moderate Republican. What the hell is that? Oh, Olympia Snow. Yeah, okay. Moderate Republicans and Democrats have decried the bill because it is projected to force the state to cut hundreds of millions of dollars in spending, you know, for stuff like education and other services used by thousands of Kansans. What? Is there anything positive that a Republican politician has ever done? Anything. The tax cuts collapse the state's three tax brackets into two. Married couples filing jointly will pay 3% on their first $30,000 of income, 4.9% on earnings beyond that. Owners of LLCs, subchapter S corporations, and sole proprietorships will no longer have to pay taxes on non-wage income. Habit. And the new law increases the standard deduction for single head of household taxpayers from $4,500 to $9,000. The Kansas Chamber of Commerce pushed for income tax cuts all year, along with many other business groups. Derek Sontag, director of Americans for Prosperity Kansas, you know who they are, said the tax cuts will boost the state's economy and give relief to families and businesses. But this is this state aid for uninsured children gone. Education gone. Necessary infrastructure repairs gone. Clinics for poor people gone. I mean, the list is endless. What is it that I can't get my mind around it. I really can't. I'm going to move on. It's just impossible to think of what these Republican filth do constantly. Constantly. Just turning the screw harder and harder and tighter onto people already suffering. Just sitting back on their well-padded asses and enjoying their tax breaks. Unemployment comp? Well, you get it for 20 weeks. Oh, well. Chicago police today arrested 15 people. Blocking the main artery through Chicago's financial district during a demonstration against state tax breaks. Won last year by CME Group. That's the world's largest futures exchange company. They're the ones that drive all the prices up. They're the speculators and gamblers. You know, people, these right-wingers will tell you it's a free enterprise system. No, it isn't. It's not a free enterprise system at all. The whole goddamn game is rigged against you. And me, and most of us. But we are too passive to do anything about it. The 15 men and women, three of whom were in wheelchairs, were escorted to the nearby plaza in front of the Chicago Board of Trade building, where they were detained in an area cordoned off with yellow tape while officers wrote tickets. CME Group owns the Board of Trade, which offers futures on corn, soybeans, treasury notes, and stuff like that. Annette Jones, 69 years old, said after she was ticketed and released, CME needs to pay their taxes. She said her job at a home health worker was threatened by state spending cuts, and that if CME paid its fair share, those cuts might not be necessary. You ought to see what they have planned for Kansas, Annette. Most of those arrested were wearing signs on their chests that read, CME, give it back, and stop home care cuts. That's another thing in Kansas, home health care workers. So if you live in Kansas, you people who are just wetting your pants tonight because, ow, we're going to have an extra $7 in our paychecks, Maude. We are. Yes. Just remember when you need some place to stuff Granny, which eventually you will try to do because Granny Granny's retirement nest egg was wiped out by other Republicans, and Granny's starting to get sick. You never know what Granny might have. And a home health care worker to come go by Granny's house and check on her, make sure she took her meds? No. Eventually, you'll go over for a visit, and as you approach the house, you'll smell an odor, and it's the odor of a corpse. Have you ever smelled the odor of a corpse? Well, if you have, you will never forget it. Let me give you a clue. It smells like a dead, decaying rat. Now, if you would have had home health care workers funded by the state, Granny would not be laying in the corner half decayed, and the stench would not be up in your nostrils now for the rest of your life. But I digress. Last year, the Illinois legislature changed the tax code to cut about $85 million from CME's annual tax bill after CME threatened to move the commodities market trading thingy out of the state. See, that's called blackmail. But that's how capitalism works. Come on, goddammit. Selling a vial of Reagan's dried blood cells, that's capitalism. Well, what are all you right-wingers getting your bowels in an uproar over that one? Hey, if I had Reagan's blood, I'd put it on the market, too. Well, no, I wouldn't. But, you know, why not? It's free enterprise. Oh, the change that the Illinois legislature put into effect also gave a $15 million tax break to Sears, which also had threatened to leave the state. See how that works? Now, the demonstrators, the 15 people who were arrested today, said the tax breaks would lead to cuts in Illinois social services like home health care. Illinois legislators are facing a May 31 deadline to craft a deal to plug the state's chronic budget deficit. But a CME spokesman said the recent tax changes were necessary to keep CME competitive. How many commodities markets where they do the trading are there?
Cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So the CME Group, that's what it's called. It's one of these predatory capitalist organizations. They insert themselves between the buyers and the sellers of whatever commodity happens to be handled by the Chicago Board of Trade. You know, if the and they do this with futures contracts, where you bid on what the price of something is going to be 6 months from now, or 3 months, or a day, or 10 years, or whatever it is. And it has, now some people tell you, well, that makes it profitable for the growers and blah, 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 and the manufacturers. No, it doesn't. It's another form of predatory capitalism where, the shysters, the punks, the people that don't make anything, don't produce anything, don't do anything except take their vig off the top. That's where they operate. So 15 people were arrested today protesting these pigs. Now, Chicago happens to be a city of what, Kathy? About 5 million? 15 people. Is it more than that? Oh, that's right. Atlanta's 5 million. So, well, it's the third biggest radio market. So, was it 8 million? Anyway, so 15 people get busted, three of them in wheelchairs. That's shameful. It's really shameful that only 15 people. And CME, which owns Chicago Board of Trade, of course, they threatened, if you don't give us a tax, it wasn't a tax increase, they just wanted a tax cut. If you don't give it to us, we'll leave. And Sears heard about this and said, yeah, we'll leave too! So they got a $15 million tax break. Sears Holdings. A CME spokesman said the tax changes were necessary to keep CME competitive and to, quote, solidify Chicago's place as the risk management capital of the world, end quote. Risk management. You see, the way that works, it works the same way as the mafia works. Exactly the same. Risk management. You open a dry cleaning establishment in the neighborhood. And about 3 months into your new venture, you're making a little money, you're making a living, no big deal. A couple of guys walk in. And we see the owner, that's me. We want to talk to you about risk management. Like, what do you mean? You know, you got these big picture windows here. What if somebody comes out here and breaks them? Oh, well, I don't think that'll happen. Well, I'll tell you what, it could happen. $100 a week and it won't happen. We're called risk management. This is risk every, this is all kind of risk. You know, you might go to the back of the room and think you're drinking a Pepsi and you're actually drinking cleaning fluid and, you know, then you're dead. So let's sign you up for some risk management. What do you say? It's only $100 a week. That's risk management. Now, if the mafia does it, they go after the mafia. If CME Group does it, they get tax breaks. Millions and millions of dollars in tax breaks. God damn, capitalism is great. I swear to God it's great. I love it. Except, like you, I don't get any of it. I have a small business, Malloy Broadcasting. Nobody's ever come by and, have they, Kathy, and asked us about risk management. Of course, maybe that's because, well, for a lot of reasons. Police allowed the protests to block traffic for about half an hour before asking the demonstrators to move to the sidewalk. Most did immediately, while those who remained sitting at the intersection were escorted away individually. They were not handcuffed. Well, apparently there was more than 15 today. Everybody left except the 15. Mike Irvin, a member of ADAPT Chicago, a disability rights group, and one of the demonstration's organizers, said CME's tax cuts made him angry because, well, they threatened the in-home help that allows him and other disabled people to live independently. He said, quote, "The whole spirit of protest made me feel a little more optimistic than I felt in a long time," end quote. CME says, "You don't give us a tax break, we're leaving." Sears Holdings says, "You don't give us a tax break, we're leaving." So where does the money come from? Does it come from one of these goddamn filthy billionaires? No, it comes out of the pockets of disability rights groups. Well, not their pockets, but the funding that might help them live independently. Screw them, right?
go to bed angry, let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This is kind of interesting. There was a kidnapping of a 15-year-old girl. I wonder if Limbaugh was involved in this. Back in 1983 in Rome, she was the daughter of a Vatican employee. And it was believed that she was kidnapped after a music lesson on June 22nd, 1983. Now, according to Father Gabriel Amorth, you know who he is. He is the church's leading exorcist. He is. He says that this 15-year-old girl was kidnapped for Vatican sex parties. What? This is the way it's being reported in the European press. The Holy See was directly involved in the disappearance of a 15-year-old Emanuela Orlandi in 1983, according to a contentious accusation by the Catholic Church's leading exorcist, the Reverend Gabriella Amorth, claimed that the girl's kidnapping was, quote, a crime of a sexual nature, end quote. Amorth told La Stampa newspaper in Italy, quote, parties were organized with a Vatican gendarme acting as the recruiter of the girls. This is in the Telegraph of the UK. The network involved diplomatic personnel from a foreign embassy to the Holy See. I believe Emanuela ended up a victim of this circle, end quote. God, it sounds like Eyes Wide Shut, doesn't it? Amorth, who was appointed by Pope John Paul II and has carried out more than 70,000 exorcisms, is no... 70,000? 70,000? I mean, if he did one a day, click, 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 it'd take him 191 years. No, it's 70,000, Kathy. This is not... 70,000 exorcisms? He's done one a day for the past 191 years. Well, that makes sense. He probably knows Cheney real well. They probably have worked together over all that time. Anyway, Father Amorth is no stranger to controversial public statements. According to The Sun, the exorcist has called Harry Potter, the book's Harry Potter, quote, the work of the devil! And he has claimed the devil was at work in the Vatican when discussing the Catholic Church's sex scandals. That was the devil. I mean, my God, that's an old laugh-in routine. The devil made me do it. You love these people. Oh. Clues to the missing girl's whereabouts had pointed in several directions, including toward a Turkish gunman who attempted to assassinate Pope John Paul II. Remember that? On May 14th, just past, one rumor led Italian police to exhume the grave of Enrico De Pedis, a member of Rome's Magliana mob who was killed in 1990. A one-time girlfriend previously said that De Pedis committed the kidnapping, and that she was taken to the Vatican. The Vatican insists it has done everything in its power to help solve the mystery of the missing girl. This would make a great movie. Huh? And the exorcist, of course, he's right. The devil is at work in the Vatican, has been for about 1,800 years. As a matter of fact, the devil owns the Vatican. Well, come on. Of course he does. Either he does, or the Chicago Board of Trade does, one of the two. They trade futures in human souls. That happens too, you know. So now it begins. Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg accused of misleading investors. A law firm, Robbins Geller, is coordinating a class action lawsuit alleging that Facebook and its bankers did bad things. This is according to The Guardian of the UK. The lawsuit names Mark Zuckerberg as a defendant, as well as top Silicon Valley investors Peter Thiel and Mark Andreessen. So it's Facebook, Morgan Stanley, and some of the biggest names in Silicon Valley being pursued over the over Facebook's disastrous sale. Now, the law firm going after them is the same law firm that went after the corpse of Enron and got a $7 billion settlement for Enron shareholders. So this should be interesting. The law firm, Robbins Geller, is coordinating a class action lawsuit alleging that Facebook and its bankers misled investors about the true state of their business while informing a handful of privileged clients about the company's true prospects. Ooh. The lawsuit filed in New York names the people I mentioned. Also Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Barclays Capital. It comes as U.S. regulators announce that they're investigating the handling of Facebook's initial public offering. More shareholder lawsuits are expected. Isn't it funny how that works? More and more capitalist garbage vomit. Here we go again, you know. Anybody who sits out there, any normal person like you and me, any one of us cows, you know, the common folk, And we hear for weeks, oh, Facebook is going to go public. Oh, God, it's going to go public at $38. It's an initial public offering. Ooh, I'm going to, let's see, how much money have I got? I can afford 20 shares. I'm going to buy 20 shares. It'll be $760. And let's see, within a week, it'll be up to 10,000. I know it will because everybody's talking about, oh, my God. So I get my money ready. And, of course, unbeknownst to me, the people on the inside have already bought their shares for $2. And they're waiting. They're waiting for the suckers. Ding, 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 ding. Let's do this. Ah, give me some, give me some, give me some. And all these people buy shares. Where did the shares come from? From the people who own them. How much do the people who own them pay? Oh, $1, $2. And how much are they selling for? $38. How much do the people who own them make? Billions. How much am I going to make? I got 760 in this. Nothing. But, no. Nothing. But I, no. Nothing. Jesus God. I mean, this never stops, does it? It just never stops. In the lawsuit, Robbins Geller alleges that Facebook bankers cut their forecasts of the company's revenue growth during the middle of their IPO roadshow when bankers and Facebook executives, including Mark Zuckerberg, met analysts and potential investors. They told them, hey, you're not going to make as much as you think. Reuters reported this week that in the run-up to the IPO, Morgan Stanley told some major clients that consumer internet analyst Scott Devitt had cut his revenue forecast for the Facebook. All the insiders knew. They all knew. Well, should we tell the public? Are you kidding? Well, what about all these people who are going to buy shares? Exactly. You want to screw that up? Oh, my God. Well, young master of the universe, Mark Zuckerberg, will be okay. We all know that. And so will all the people who set up the suckers. The suckers are anyone who bought Facebook on opening day. If you bought shares of Facebook, you have a great big S right down your midsection, and that stands for sucker fool. Sucker fool. Great big ass. Sucker fool. Oh, I'm going to get rich. No, you're not. The people who are going to get rich have already gotten rich. What you are going to do is to once again, provide the wherewithal for the insiders to get rich.
But I cashed in part of my 401k.
Exactly! That's how it works.
What do you mean?
Right.
Oh, damn.
I don't know. So Zuckerberg is down to what now? He's 14 billion? 12 billion? My. Republicans are just, they're just insane. I mean, right-wingers are just crazy. There is something that you probably don't know about. I never heard of it. The American Community Survey. It is part of the U.S. Census. And the survey of American households has been around in some form, according to the New York Times, since 1850. And it's a supplement to the basic every 10-year census. It tells us how poor we are, how rich we are, who's suffering, who's thriving, where people work, what kind of training people need to get jobs, what languages people speak, who uses food stamps, who has access to health care. You know, stuff that a society has to know. It's the country's primary check for determining how well the government is doing, and in fact, what the government will be doing. The findings of the survey help determine how over $400 billion in government funds is distributed each year and to whom. But last week, the Republicans voted to eliminate the survey altogether in the House on the grounds that the government should not be butting its nose into Americans' homes. Yeah, goddammit, they can butt their noses into a woman's vagina. But not into Americans' homes! Now, listen to this. Daniel Webster, I've quoted him before. He's a first-term Republican congressman from, of course, Florida, who sponsored the legislation to get rid of this. He says, this is a program that intrudes on people's lives, just like the Environmental Protection Agency does, or just like banking regulations do. What? What a sick son of a bitch. These people are all mad. Mad. We're spending $70 per person to fill this out. That's just not cost effective. Since this is not a scientific survey, it's a random survey. Hey, you dumbass. The randomness of the survey is precisely what makes it scientific. Jesus God, these... Oh! Each year, the Census Bureau polls a representative randomized sample of about 3 million American households about demographics, habits, language spoken, occupation, housing, and various other categories. The resulting numbers are released without identifying individuals and other and offer current demographic portraits of even the country's tiniest little communities. It is the largest and only data set of its kind. And it's used across the federal government in formulas that determine how much funding states and communities get for things like education and public health. For example, there's a question on flush toilets, right? Now, you and I sit there and go, flush toilets? Well, goddamn, why do they need to know about that? That's the one that right-wingers like to cite as being especially invasive. But you see, the question is used to help assess groundwater contamination for rural parts of the country that don't have modern waste disposal systems. Didn't think of that, did you? Law enforcement agencies likewise use the data to predict criminal activities like methamphetamine production. Of course, that's all done by right-wing trolls, so, you know, of course they're going to get pissed off. A number of questions on the survey have been added because Congress specifically demanded that they be added. In 2008, for example, Congress passed a law requiring the American Community Survey to add questions about computer and internet use. Why? Well, why do you think? Oh, my God. This guy who runs, or this woman who runs an analytics company says, quote, knowing what's happening in our country or our economy is so desperately important to keeping our economy functioning smoothly. The reason the Great Recession did not become another Great Depression is because of the more current economic data we have today that we didn't have in the 1930s, end quote. And she added that having good data about the state of the economy was one of America's primary competitive advantages. She said, you know, the quote, the Chinese are probably watching all this uproar to do away with this with glee. And you remember in Orwell's book, you don't publish bad data. You make stuff up. Private company and industry groups, including the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you know, the neo-fascists, National Retail Federation, National Association of Home Builders, they're pissed off. Target recently released a video explaining how it used these census data to determine where to locate new stores. Economic development organizations and other business groups say they use the numbers to figure out where potential workers are. But Daniel Webster, he says, businesses should be thanking us for reducing the government's reach. What really promotes business in this country, he said, is liberty, not demand for information. And, of course, Jesus. Let's not forget Jesus. Yeah. Mr. Webster has gone so far as to say the American Community Survey is unconstitutional. Of course, the basic every 10-year census is specifically enumerated in the Constitution, and courts have ruled that this longer form of the census survey is constitutional as well. But to these half-assed, mind-bended freaks like Daniel Webster, Republican of Florida, it's just all gibberish. Right, Danny? We'll be right back. It's church night. the hour. A couple little recapped emails from last night's program. And again, let me mention, happy birthday to Bob Alexander. I wonder if he's getting Social Security yet. A couple of comments from last night. Michael and Roswell, when we were talking about war crimes and the fact that the investigative commission in the UK is trying to determine the extent to which the leaders of that country were complicit in illegal activity, or I don't suppose they're trying to render a verdict, whether it was legal or illegal, but just to get the facts out on the table. So if a tribunal that would decide legality or illegality would have the facts in front of them. And the fact that so many people who have committed war crimes and crimes against humanity in the past 30 years are in positions or were in positions of power in various so-called, you know, freedom-loving democratic governments, right? You know who we're talking about, the usual gang of slime. But as Michael and Roswell points out, after all, it was General Curtis LeMay, the commander of the forces that firebombed Tokyo and sent the atomic bombs to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It was LeMay who admitted, had the United States lost, he and others would probably have been tried and convicted of war crimes. So, conclusion, the winners not only write the history, but they also write the rules. And that's the part to me that is just so contemptuous, so disgusting, so immoral. It really is. I mean, come on. To have put the world through, everything that we put the world through subsequent to World War II, the trials, the Nuremberg tribunals, where the United States, UK, France, who else participated in the prosecution? I don't think they did, the Soviets? I don't remember. But it was a US-UK run enterprise to begin with and to end with. But to then complete those inquiries, and they took, what, 2 years, 3 years until the final conclusions were made about the nature of the crimes, the horrendous, stupefyingly monstrousness, if that's the word, of the crimes. I mean, the systematic murder of 6, 7, 8 million men, women, and children because of their ethnic and religious belief. I mean, this was unprecedented, wasn't it? I realize that the Holocaust probably has its counterparts in earlier history. What the Catholic Church did to women who were practitioners of the healing arts all through the Middle Ages. I don't think anyone will ever know how many women were tried as witches and burned at the stake, murdered, killed. But for the systematic record-keeping aspect of the Holocaust, I think it is unique, isn't it? Of course it is. So we took all the evidence of what occurred during World War II, and we came up with certain conclusions. And Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson, who led the American prosecution in Nuremberg, defined, I don't have the quote in front of me, but the worst crime of all international crimes, because it embodies all the other ones, is the invasion of another country. I mean, that was categorically stated. That was pure and simple, basic English, simple sentences. No complexity. Here it is. So for Bush and Blair and their supporting cast of characters to decide to go ahead and invade Iraq with no provocation, no reason, no nothing, meant simply that what occurred at Nuremberg was nothing less than judicial murder. And that's just a simple legal fact. It has to be. It has to be a fact. One or the other has to be wrong. Either Bush and his cohort committed monstrous war crimes and should have been tried, and were it not for the fact that the rules have changed, hanged. Blair also. Were it not for the fact that these two were not tried and hanged, then it must be concluded that the decisions and conclusions that were rendered at Nuremberg and the fact that people were hanged after those trials, that that was judicial murder. Both can't be right. It can't be right that the Germans were guilty, the Japanese were guilty, therefore they were hanged. And at the same time, it cannot be right that the same crimes committed by the Americans and the British and whomever else involved itself in invasion of a country, in simulated drowning, torture, were not hanged, were not tried. You can't have two opposing points of view, both of them correct. Not in this dimension. Maybe somewhere else. So, as Michael points out, the winners not only write the history, but they write the rules also. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we don't care about this. We really don't. We don't care. Nobody thinks about this. You know, we don't care about this. Little kids that, not little so much, but high school students that are being learning American history, contemporary with the past decade, they're not learning that George W. Bush and Tony Blair and all the leaders involved in both countries committed crimes against humanity, war crimes. They're not learning that. They're not learning that the rules put down at Nuremberg were violated by these Western powers. They're not learning that where it concerned the invasion of Iraq. They're learning nothing of the sort. Their little still forming minds couldn't handle it. If you went into a high school right now and taught that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and the entire cadre of these monsters committed war crimes vis-a-vis their own, our own definitions of what war crimes are, these children would go insane. They couldn't control it. Or they'd run home to mommy and daddy and say, is this correct? And mommy and daddy would say, oh my God, what are they teaching you? And next thing you know, there'd be an investigation, the principal would be fired, the teachers would be accused of sedition, blah, 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 blah. Right? You know I'm right. You know that's right. Not me. You know that is correct. What a sad, sorry reality that Bush got away with what he got away with. Oh, impeachment's off the table. Impeachment is totally off the table. The Speaker of the House said, no, no, no. The new president said, no, we're going to look forward, not backward. Oh, really? Why wasn't that said after World War II? Well, let's look forward. The 6 million Jewish corpses, you know, it's just a fact of history. It has nothing to do with us. It was a German thing. Let's look forward. Huh? The 80 million dead around this tired planet? Ah, let's look forward. Never mind. But as Michael pointed out, General Curtis LeMay said, you know, had we lost the war, we would have been tried as war criminals. You goddamn right you would have. When you incinerate people in Dresden and Tokyo and Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and I mean, just burn them to a crisp, just fry them. Is that a war crime?
So much more about the good guys.
Bo.
Won't you stand by the flag? Was the question unasked? Won't you join in and fight with the Allies? What could we say? We're only 25 years old,
with 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold.
This kind makes that violence unthinkable. We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow old. Fighters for Texaco, fighters for
truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Now, also left over from last night regarding the crazed Christian preacher in North Carolina, the one who talked about the fence, putting all them queers and lesbians and homosexuals and in behind the fence and dropping food down. You know, his inadvertent allusions to the Bible are just amazing. You know, manna from heaven, the Jews, the Hebrews wandering in the Sinai all those years, and food would drop from heaven. This guy's a really sick son of a bitch. But he is, you know, he's a preacher of Christianity. So, of course, he's going to be a sick son of a bitch. He just is. Terry in Flushing, New York wrote, "Now, hi, Mike. Apparently, Reverend Worley was never kissed by his father. His father probably beat the living blank out of him instead. It would be comical if it didn't bring up memories of the Holocaust as well as the internment of American Japanese citizens during World War II. Why do I put both occurrences in the same sentence? Because both events, the Holocaust and the internment, began with a certain group of people being ostracized and hated by the countries in which they lived, generously encouraged by a hateful and irresponsible media." Stay sane, Terry in Flushing, New York. Yeah, that is so true. And the demonizing of people who happen to be gay, to me, is a perfect copy, clone, of what happened in the early stages to the Jews and after the incident at Pearl Harbor to Japanese Americans. And it... you know, going back to the German theologian Niemöller, Pastor Niemöller, his statement about you know, keeping your mouth shut when they come for various groups, and when they being the authorities, when they finally come for you, there's no one left to speak for you. In so many instances, though, throughout history, has it not been the religious authorities who come for you, or a coalition, or a co-conspiracy of religious authorities and totalitarians, as was the case with the Catholic Church and the Nazi regime in Europe in the 30s and 40s. It was a totally complicit movement. And, of course, everybody dances around that. You know, oh, well, you know, it wasn't really the Catholics. It wasn't really the Pope. It wasn't really the priests or the cardinals. And to that, if I were working only in satellite radio, I would scream an epithet that would be has to do with cow droppings, or I should say bull droppings. The entire enterprise of the extermination of the Jews was a co-production of the Nazi regime and the Catholic Church. The Nazis were the active partners. The Catholic Church blessed the event with their silence. You have a problem with that? I'm sure you do. I'm sure I'll get the emails tomorrow. All I can say about that is bite me. You know, I don't care what your interpretation of history is. There is enough evidence that's out there on the web, on the internet, on the World Wide Web, on the internet. It's all there. If you are inclined to take a look, go take a look. God damn it, go take a look. I didn't know this stuff either. I had no idea. But there it is. Sex-crazed Southerners. I mentioned that last night. Roz in Canada writes, "Mike, what on earth is wrong with some of those Southerners? What's with the weird accent? And why haven't they learned to speak English yet? I guess they ain't no learning. They ain't had no learning. And as for kissing some man, that so-called reverend must think about it all the time. I've never heard anybody speak so much about sex as these damn right-wing Southerners, Roz." That's true. I mean, we can go ahead and stereotype a whole section of the country, and it's true. You know, it's true about the hot, steamy, bug-infested South. There is an awful lot of emphasis on sex here, but it's the wrong emphasis. It's the wrong emphasis. And a lot of the emphasis on sex is done to cover up one's own behavior. You know, remember that song that came out about 40 years ago, Harper Valley PTA? Remember that? That kind of nailed it when that song came out. I was living in the South at the time, and, you know, there were an awful lot of kind of embarrassed looks back and forth when that song came out. Oh, I know what they're talking about. Oh, yeah. I know what they're talking about. But you see, what they have in the South is this fundamentalist Christianity that says you can do any damn thing you want to do. You can be the most violent, hate-filled, drunken, raping, child molesting, all the way up to murder, and you're still home free. You're still home free! There's no penalty. There is no penalty. At least the Catholics make you chant some stuff. But the Protestants, there's no penalty. All you have to do to be cleansed of your sins and washed in the blood of the Lamb, amen, is to just say, forgive me, Jesus, for I've sinned. I'm on your side now. Welcome, my son. Welcome to the fold. I think that sucks, don't you? I mean, come on. And these are the same Christian folks who will tell you that if you do the crime, you got to do the time. But in the Christian faith, there is no time. No. There isn't. All you have to do is repent. Repent, brother. Just repent. Now, if the state applies some kind of a penalty to your criminal behavior, well, that's something different. That movie was shot maybe 15 miles from the Molloy compound, or at least what we want you to think is the Molloy compound. A couple more here from last night from Bruce Enberg regarding the airdrops that the Reverend talked about, you know, dropping food down to the gays, lesbians, and queers with a 50-100-mile fence. Gotta get it. I'm against it. Prairie 2 writes, how about putting all the right wingers on a reservation and just dropping them bootstraps? Let them pull themselves up on their own. A bunch that doesn't know how their toasters work would starve to death in weeks. Or you could just, you know, give them just one hammer. Collateral deaths would finish them in hours. Ooh. And regarding, you know, I mentioned that I had seen on television. I know. I should stay away from that. But I attend my Television Anonymous meetings every chance I can get. You know, they're all over the city and, you know, any time, day or night. Sometimes I slip up, though, and... But I digress. I was watching the TV, and they had a report yesterday about the gap that exists between women who support Mitt Romney and women who support Barack Obama. Now, as far as I'm concerned, there shouldn't be any gap at all. I mean, 100% of American women should stay as far away from Mitt Romney as you do somebody who cuts the cheese in a theater. I mean, you just need to get away from him. My sisters, you know, this is a guy standing there with a vaginal probe. Well, you know, and a hammer to smash Planned Parenthood. What the hell is wrong with you people? Come on, women, So I commented that the 19-point gap or 17-point gap that existed with Obama in the lead had narrowed, according to ABC, NBC, CBS, XYZ, had narrowed from 16 or 18 or 19 points down to about 6 points. And when I see polls like that, I just, you know, I can feel the bile start to rise in my stomach, or as Stephanie Miller says, a little bit of vomit comes up in the back of my throat. And, I, you know, it's a horrifying, that's when I feel the most frustrated and feel like I live in an armed madhouse, as Greg Palast put it. And there is just no sense anymore in the political system. Thomas Frank has explained it. Many people have explained it. This inclination on the part of American citizens to do everything they can to destroy democracy, to destroy their own lives, to destroy the future for their children, to destroy everything. All in most instances, all in the name of religion. You know, why preserve anything? Because Jesus is coming back. The rapture is just around the corner. If we can just get them Israelis to invade everything and let the slaughter begin, Jesus will be so happy, and we will all rise on a cloud of nuclear radiation and toxic dust up to heaven. Amen. But I digress. Anyway, regarding those polls, Bruce writes, any poll that shows the so-called gap closing should be taken with the grain of salt in the back of a 30-ton 6x6 Oshkosh snowplow with V front blade and double wing plows. The media doesn't want to admit that Romney can't possibly win because there is as much as $4 billion in unregulated super PAC money at stake, and it all goes into the pockets of the media. It could dry up overnight, since only a handful of billionaires are writing the checks, but they, the media, can't have that. You can have a lot of polling for $4 billion. You only need to be careful what questions you ask. For example, how do you feel about Romney stopping Obama from beating a woman to death? Well, Bruce is right, and I keep forgetting that. Every once in a while, I have this delusional thought that I live in a country where there is a responsible media, where if the president of the United States says, well, I was born in Independence, Missouri, and I ran a haberdashery there, and now I find myself president, and I've got to decide to nuke the Japanese. And then somebody else says, you know what? Harry Truman really speaks secret Swahili, and he was born in a mud hut somewhere over there in Africa. And then the media jumps up and says, okay, well, on the one hand, was Harry Truman born in a mud hut, or was he from Independence, Missouri? You decide. We report. Yeah. That's what we have now. This is church night, and I've been, trying to come back to church night. I saw this thing in the Times today that just was amazing. You know, I usually leave the Hindus alone because I don't really, Hinduism is not a dominant or even a noticeable religion in the United States, unless you happen to be Hindu. But in the article in the Times, Dateline New Delhi, we're talking about the monkeys there, the rhesus monkeys that have free reign of New Delhi, and that the population, the rhesus monkey population of Delhi, has grown so large and so aggressive that city officials there are overwhelmed. They have petitioned India's Supreme Court to relieve them, city officials, of the task of monkey control. Now, you would think, wouldn't you? Well, here's a way to fix that. Just go out in the street and shoot the little sons of bitches. Because they're doing all kinds of bad stuff. They attack people now. They get into your pockets. They will take food out of your hands. They will stop women on the streets going home with grocery bags and surround her and get very threatening and bare their teeth until the woman drops the bags and run. I mean, it's really something. And the reason all this is happening is because very simple. People feed them. The director of veterinary services for Delhi's principal city government said, quote, we have trapped 13,000 monkeys since 2007. Oh, big deal. 13,000 monkeys? You can find that probably in a block. Anyway, Delhi's monkey population is skyrocketing. Now, you see, monkeys are the living representatives of the cherished Hindu god Hanuman, or Hanuman. And Hindu tradition calls for feeding monkeys on Tuesdays and Saturdays. Isn't that from a Paul Simon song?
Crosby,
Stills, and Nash?
Sweet Judy Blue Eyes.
Oh, that's right. It's from Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. So Hindu tradition says feed the monkeys on Tuesdays and Saturdays in order to please, I don't know, is this god crazy? Hanuman? But you're not allowed to do anything to these sacred monkeys because they are representatives of a Hindu god. And apparently it's a pretty important god. Now, monkey bites, of course, can lead to rabies or a fatal form of herpes, bacterial infections. What else? All kinds of stuff. Oh, and the other thing. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at Bethesda, Maryland, wrote in an email, monkeys are smart enough to attack the face of a person. They go for your face. I guess that's so you can't identify them in the lineup, you know? Bring all these monkeys in here. People are dying from the monkey scourge. For example, a Delhi deputy mayor died when he fell from his terrace after being attacked by monkeys. And here recently, a 14-year-old girl was seriously injured when she fell from the roof of a five-story building after monkeys attacked her. These little monsters enter people's homes. They rip out wiring. They steal clothes. They bite people who surprise them. There was a solution. Some very enterprising man came up with an idea, and that is to get a bigger monkey, a langur, to urinate around people's homes and businesses and temples, because the acrid smell of langur urine scares the smaller rhesus monkey away for weeks. But the odor's no bouquet for humans, the Times reports, and as soon as that stench disappears, the rhesus monkey come back. Amar Singh, who is a langur handler, was interviewed. He was sitting in the street, across the street from one of Delhi's diplomatic neighborhoods with his monkey systematically stripped leaves off a tree in the yard of well-tended homes. Mr. Singh said he had 65 of these urinating on prominent homes and buildings throughout Delhi. He and his partners feed and walk each monkey, each langur, during the day. And he charges about $200 a month for monkey pee. Now, why is this? Because the monkeys are emissaries from a Hindu god. That's why. Birthday to Bob Alexander. So anyway, back to this rhesus monkey story. It was on the cover of the New York Times because, these monkeys are just destroying anything that gets in their way, including people. They can't be killed and eaten or killed or whatever, no matter what damage they do. And I know you shouldn't kill animals. Okay. But this is a pretty bad situation. But they are living representatives of the Hindu god Hanuman. So, Hindu tradition says you got to feed them on Tuesdays and Saturdays, whether Judy Collins is with you or not. You just have to do that in order to satisfy. You know, Hindu gods they're all schizophrenic, like Kalki, the female goddess, who on the one hand nourishes her babies at all kinds of breasts hanging from her chest, but on the other hand, if they piss her off, she'll bite their heads off and eat them. You know, it's kind of like the Old Testament for the Hebrews. Your children, love your children, but if they don't do what you say, take them out in the yard and kill them. Ah, don't you just love religion? Oh, my God. And I know what you're thinking. Well, why not trap them and release them somewhere else? Well, where? And besides, years of trapping, according to the Times, using cages baited with fruit and nuts and probably small children, they've taught the monkeys to avoid the traps. And for a time, the city hired professional trapping teams from the south of India. See, even in India, the south produces really weird people, right? What do you do for a living? I trap monkeys. Oh, really? But even they have stopped coming to Delhi. Himachal Pradesh, a northern Indian state, issued permits to kill monkeys that destroyed crops, but there was so many protests that the practice was stopped. It's not even being considered in Delhi. You know, you get out there and start killing the emissaries of this god, and you're going to have riots on your hand. And you know, first thing the Hindus would do in a case like that is attack the Muslims. I mean, why not? You know? Get the Muslims! But we didn't have anything to do with this. Doesn't matter! It's just... Oh, my God. Now, I know what you're thinking. If you're like most of us, you may or may not have been aware that the little rhesus monkeys are emissaries from the god Hindu god Hanuman. You're probably thinking, what about the cows? Well, the cows, it gets a little dodgy with the cows. The cows used to be very easily eaten in the Vedic faith. There was no problem. But the cow had not always been sacred. Cows were eaten. They were sacrificed in Vedic times. But the cow was possibly revered because of the how the Vedic people lived. And they were, you know, pretty much forest dwellers or savanna dwellers. And they relied on the cow for dairy products, for tilling the field. They used cow dung as a source of fuel and fertilizer. And also, cow dung was very important for growing psilocybus mushrooms, which naturally grow out of the animal's own excrement. Think about that for a second now before you know, all you fellow psilocybin eaters, like moi, you know, you got to think about that. the psilocybus mushroom spores come right out of cow dung. So maybe the cows are sacred. I mean, did you ever stop and think about that? Anyway, a cow's status as a caretaker, so to speak, led to identifying it as an almost maternal figure. Now, according to the Hindu faith, Krishna himself was a cow herder. And Krishna is like the sine qua non where it concerns that whole pantheon of Hindu gods. I mean, they have how many gods do the Hindus have? Now, I kind of like that. If I were going to be religious or believe any kind of religious bat crap, I would probably drift toward either Wicca, because it's so earth-centered and it's so, well, like Vedic religions, very pastoral. It's very early Vedic religion, very pastoral, very relaxing, very, you know, sit by the creek and listen to the babbling brook and eat some mushrooms. But on the other hand, a religion that offers you a whole closet full of gods and goddesses. I mean, all kinds of, wow, looky here, you know, all sorts. That makes more sense to me. That way, if you piss off a god, you're not pissing off the god. You see what I'm saying? And your chances of survival are increased exponentially. At least in Hinduism, your chances are increased because there's so many of them. And you can petition this god. You know, if one of the gods gets pissed off at you and all of a sudden you find that you've developed, oh, I don't know, some kind of unstoppable diarrhea because you have pissed off a certain god, you can go to a different god in Hinduism and make prayers and offerings and, you know, maybe the diarrhea will stop. I realize that's a very minor thing, but unless you have it. But that's why having bunches of gods, to me, makes more sense than having just one. If any of it makes any sense at all. So, Krishna was a cow herder, and therefore cows are sacred, and everything about a cow is somehow used, or was, urine, the dung, the meat, the milk, the labor. So between Hanuman, the Hindu god that sends monkeys to represent him, and Krishna, who was a cow herder, you see, it's not just Western religions that get a little bit funky. See you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.